Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. I have with me three people who've been on the show before as my co-host, and this is a Future State Friday episode. We're going to be going in-depth with spoilers over the first week of Future State. So you've been warned. If you plan on reading these Future State titles for the first week, these are titles that came out on the 5th of January. If you're planning on reading them and you have not, you do not want to listen to this episode because we're going to be spoiling. We're going to give our thoughts on the story, the art, what we thought. Is this working? Is it not? So forewarned is forearmed. So let's start with Dark Knight Nation. Give a quick intro where people may have seen you before. Then we'll go with Nick, and then we'll go with Comic Boom. And then at the end, we'll tell everybody where these guys can be found. So go ahead and kick it off, Knight.
Cool. Yeah, my name is Trevor. I run a YouTube channel called Dark Knight Nation. It's where I occasionally discuss and analyze comics on a sort of deep and editorial level, and like to have evergreen conversations weekly when I can with co-hosts such as Jace and Comic Boom. I'm also the writer and creator of a independent comic book series called Area 51, The Helix Project. And listen to the end of this podcast, and we'll let you know where to get that bad boy. But yeah, so I guess for Swamp Thing, right? We're starting with Swamp Thing. You said that. Written by Ram V, art by Mike Perkins. We are going to spoilers, so I guess I'll just kind of get on with it. It felt really vanilla. It is interesting concept wise because I get a sense that it takes place a great deal of time after the sort of body of Future State, and with the supposed creation of the Omniverse post death metal. It does not very much reflect anything that we've seen thus far anywhere. It's pretty much a grim landscape where it seems like the world kind of fought back against humans and all sort of organic meat-based life, I suppose you can say. And the green is pretty much taken over with few sects of humans left. I'm assuming there's some sort of virus akin to what's happening right now, but to a far greater extreme that took down humanity. And this issue was just very sort of vanilla, as I feel like is pretty consistent throughout most of Future State, if I'm to be honest with you. I felt like nothing really happened. And because there was no sort of one shot for Future State setting up the world, this issue, amongst many others, sort of falls victim to the writer needs to flood the pages with expository writing in order to explain to you what the heck's going on and why it's happening. So it gets pretty drab at points. And ultimately, I felt like this first issue didn't quite give you a sense of the stakes or a sense of why I should be interested, to be quite frank, aside from a couple really sort of resonant thematic underpinnings for the Swamp Thing character regarding his humanity, or the humanity of his that used to be. And overall, it was all right. I didn't hate it. I also didn't like it. I thought Mike Perkins' art was pretty fitting for the Swamp Thing character. Nice sort of gritty line work, does well with texture. So, if you're more of an art person than a writing person, I think you'll really enjoy it. Even if you're a writing person, I think it's all right.
Yeah, it's interesting that, we kind of just started randomly. We didn't have a particular issue that we were going to start with. But it is interesting that we chose this, because I agree with you, Trevor. I think that this issue is very emblematic of what I've experienced with the first 2 weeks of Future State. So, yeah. And I've talked about this in the preparation for Future State episode I did with Nick. You know, this was supposed to be 5G. We all know that. And on that timeline, in that reality, in the alternate universe where Dan Didio didn't get fired and they did 5G, these creators had a much wider, longer runway to tell the story. So now you're condensing all their ideas as much as they can try to fit into two issues. You're trying to, as a creator, I would want, hey, I have all these great ideas for 5G. I'm going to try to stick them in these two books, even when there's not room for it all, right? And I kind of feel the same way about the art too, because Mike Perkins, and it's so evident, one of the best things I liked about this issue was there's some dialogue and some text about apparently we're being led to believe that this is a much more complex plant life form that Swamp Thing and other members of his race, I'll call it, have. And Perkins does these really detailed drawings that look like they're right out of a a botanist, textbook, somebody who's majoring in botany, where you see the little cell walls, cellulose and all that. And they're very detailed. And I can only imagine how long it took him to draw those, which must be why the rest of the art, I feel, isn't up to Mike Perkins's usual standards. You know, I feel like his art is usually a little tighter. But I do agree with Trevor. You're talking post-apocalyptic, you're talking, gritty world. So maybe he purposely did it that way. I'm not sure. I'm just used to his art looking cleaner. So yeah, ultimately, it's interesting to hear Trevor go first on this. I'm not a Swamp Thing fan, so I didn't necessarily think I was going to be like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. But even I was a little disappointed in it, because I know Ram V. I'm a big fan of it. I've become a big fan of his over the last couple of years, reading things he's done. I think he writes like the best Catwoman that I've ever read. I absolutely love his Catwoman work. And this is just sort of, okay, I read it, who cares? You know, the Mike Perkins artwork, except for those few illustrations that look like they're right out of a scientific textbook. I think this is going to sound kind of weird. I think the best thing about the whole work of the whole book is the lettering. Who's the letter here? Adita Bidikar. Interesting lettering. And again, maybe it's because there's so much of it, like Trevor was saying, because you get a lot of exposition, you get a lot of words, and he does switch things up in terms of what the word balloons look like and things like that. I thought the color work by June Chung was done excellent as well, both in the kind of those scientific type drawings and the drabness of the world that Trevor mentioned. So it's not that there's no value here, comic creator wise. I just think it's trying to stick too much story into the book without enough buildup, and ultimately I don't care for it that much. It's meh. What are your thoughts, Nick? And don't forget to give a quick introduction to everybody of where they may know you from, if they don't remember you from before.
I'm Nick. I write for LRM. I've been on the show several times. Well, I used to write for LRM. Now I do two podcasts, Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, and we started a Marvel Multiverse Monday podcast to cover stuff like WandaVision every week, since we have new Marvel every week basically this year. But I really haven't read much Swamp Thing at all, except for when he pops up in like Justice League Dark. In the past, during the New 52 and even the post New 52 Justice League Dark that they had going for a while after they did Justice League. This is probably the least interesting story to me, just because I know the least about the character. You know, I know all about the Green and like his relationship with some other characters like Constantine. But otherwise, I really don't know a lot about him. They refer to him as the Green in this, right? Mm-hmm. Because he become kind of, that's what I got from it, not knowing much about. And I assume this whole children thing is a new angle too.
Yeah.
And it did say that he just created them like almost like seeds, not like they, because they all have very human characteristics.
Well, I think that was a sort of thematic underpinning of the whole story, was that he was trying to replicate some sense of his humanity, assuming that it's lost between like the high detailings of his new biology, having children and acting as if they literally call him father as well. I think it's simultaneously in a religious sense, spiritually to the Green, but also because he literally created them.
Yeah, cool.
Any thoughts about the art or the color work?
Right now. I don't know. I'm not a big art expert. It didn't really stand out to me as negatively as some of the other books I read this week. So
all right.
I'll say it's so. Sometimes the creatures look the same, like his children, with the exception of
the blue guy.
The dick's name. Yeah, that he keeps like saying, like, shut up.
Right on. All right, Rocky, what about you?
This is probably the first comic book in a long time that I can recall that my favorite province of Saskatchewan is actually mentioned in this comic book. That's quite exciting, as well as Nunavut, Yurka Nunavut, or Nunavut. I'm a Canadian. That's Nunavut's in Canada. I can't pronounce my own provinces in my country. This is the best Mike Perkins art's been that I've ever seen of his to come out of Mike Perkins, in my opinion. The last time I saw Mike Perkins, I saw his illustrations for the Lois Lane series, and I quite enjoyed it there. The story with Swamp Thing here I actually think it's a more exciting Swamp Thing story than I've read in the past. I'm not a big Swamp Thing fan. I really like the idea of Obsidian coming back. That surprised me at the end. It actually captured my interest. I'm not really big on the whole that Swamp Thing is often I just find the subject matter generally something a little bit off-putting for myself, but I like that they're expanding the Swamp Thing family, expanding the Swamp Thing characters. I like the idea maybe that he's having a little bit more relationship that they're expanding the mythology of the Green a bit. I like that. And Ram V is somebody. He's been impressive on Catwoman. I think he's maybe a little overrated with Justice League Dark, but he's nurturing. He's getting better. He's learning. And I'm going to give Swamp Thing actually another issue after this. I wasn't even going to pick this up, but I'm glad I did. And I'm looking forward to the next issue, actually. And I say that surprisingly. So color me impressed. I'm impressed. And overall, I'm going to have positive things to say about this first batch of Future State. And maybe that's just because I'm so depressed after death metal. And we're finally done death metal, but I'm looking forward and I'm going to be very positive this evening.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so this is funny. I thought the best moment was Obsidian showing up because I do like that character. I think he's interesting, but it just goes to show you, because I read these, a while ago now, when I first, because I got these on December 23rd. So I read them quite a while ago. I forgot all about Obsidian showing up and even being excited. And so it kind of goes to show. And then, you talk about, well, I'm going to go ahead and pick up the next issue. And I wasn't. And I think, well, yeah, that you wonder, the cynical part of my brain goes, you wonder if DC knew two issues was like the sweet spot. Hey, how long can we get people to buy this work that we already paid for that we're kind of throwing against the wall and see what sticks?
Yeah.
One issue, the people are probably going to pick it up. Maybe we can stretch it to two because everybody's I'll go ahead and try it for a second one. If we go to three, people are just going to, it's going to drop off a cliff, because the quality just doesn't seem to be there for these titles yet, but we'll get there. All right. Well, I guess I'm going, Rocky, you're up first on the next one. Harley Quinn. Let me read off the creative team really quickly before you start. It's written by Stephanie Phillips. We have art by Simone DeMayo, colors by Tamra Bonvillain, letters by ALW's Troy Pateri. So give us your thoughts on Future State Harley Quinn.
Sorry, I was I had the wrong comic in front of me. I thought we were doing, in any event, Harley Quinn. This was actually one of my favorite Stephanie Phillips. I followed her. She's written A Man Among Ye. She's written she's written a number of titles that I've reviewed on my channel.
Did you do Artemis and the Assassin?
Artemis and the Assassin. Yes, yeah. Thank you. I reviewed that, and I have to say that A Man Among Ye, believe it or not, they're both underwhelming. Artemis and the Assassin, I thought, was very sort of derivative. It started off good, and then it disappointed near the end, I thought. And, I love Stephanie Phillips. She's great. She gives great interviews. I know she's even like, I understand she even has like Muay Thai boxing or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's very interesting to talk to. I've watched some of her interviews. I think even you interviewed her, didn't you?
She's been on the show three times.
Yeah. And I'm pleased to hear that she was given an opportunity for DC. She's always been very friendly on Twitter. And I have to say that this is the best written Stephanie Phillips story. And I'm so happy that it's Harley Quinn. The artist, Simone DeMayo, is very different. It's a different style for Harley Quinn. I think it works, takes a little bit getting used to, I think. But it's got sort of a future. For me, it's like a futuristic sort of cartoony feel. But it's got energy. It's kinetic. It's a lot of fun. And what I love about the writing, what Stephanie Phillips does so well, is that she makes Harley Quinn intelligent. This involves Scarecrow. Scarecrow is it's obviously in Gotham City dealing with the Magistrate, and the Scarecrow is trying to locate and take down other Gotham villains. In particular, they starts off trying to take up Firebug, and then there was Mr. Pig, And she really showcases Harley Quinn's ability just as a psychologist, utilizing Harley Quinn's other skills. Because Harley Quinn, it actually reminds me the last time, the only other title where Harley Quinn has been shown to be this and show more of Harley Quinn's intelligence, you got to look to Sean Gordon Murphy's Harley Quinn series in the Murphyverse.
I not to interrupt, but yeah, I agree with you 100%, and that's why I like that White Knight Harley Quinn. But also, yeah. Are you not reading the Joker Harley Criminal Sanity by Cammy Garcia?
Yes, that's right. I guess I'm. That's right. Yeah, actually, that was even one of my favorite DC titles for 2020. Actually, shame on me for forgetting that. For some reason, I have that sort of in a different category because it feels so almost like real world realistic. Right. That particular title. But in any event, this really works. I'm absolutely on board for this. This is my favorite. And I find that very surprising. And I'm so happy for Stephanie Phillips because she is by far the most passionate and the most I think she gives the best interviews. She's got the most passion and she's just I was just very impressed given her relative what I figure to be her relative lack of experience. Mm-hmm. I'm actually impressed that she has done this good a job on Harley Quinn. So I'm definitely in for the long game here.
Cool. Trevor, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I haven't actually read the book in totality. I do think that for Harley Quinn, the premise sounds pretty good. And I have taken sneak peeks at the art because I am becoming a pretty big fan of Simone DiMeo. I think Rocky actually really summed up his artwork well. It's super energetic between his style of character design. Tamara Bonvillain's colors on top of Simone DiMeo is a pretty perfect casting call. And his layouts are insane. And I feel like that type of energy brought to Harley Quinn is to the benefit of the book, which is kind of a shame that Riley Rossimo will be taking over art duties for the Stephanie Phillips Harley Quinn book to come. Admittedly, you know, I do have like an anti sort of Harley Quinn, an anti-modern Harley Quinn bias. Let me add that caveat. So I wasn't super interested in picking it up, although I have heard a bit of an interview with Stephanie Phillips, and I feel like she seems like she has a pretty good direction for Harley. So, you know, if she continues to sound good, maybe this is something I might pick up, you know, in the aftermath. But you know, I'm overall glad to see a young writer that is fairly new to the industry really starting to make their bones for themselves and do a good job and build reputation. So for that, you know, I give a big thumbs up to Stephanie Phillips.
Yeah. So for me, this was the first Future State book I read, and I remember thinking, and again, Stephanie, I agree with just about everything Rocky said. She's a great interview, great person, super intelligent. Background and her father's like a history professor, and she just got her doctorate. She's actually Dr. Stephanie Phillips.
Awesome.
She's gotten that since the last time she's been on her show. I can't wait to have her back on because I keep teasing her that I'm only going to refer to her as doctor. But yeah, she's great. And to see her on such a high profile character so early on in her career is great as well. You know, DC's trying to get new blood in there. That being said, when I read this, and again, I know part of it is just my expectation. You know, you hear Future State, you hear it for so long, the marketing DC's been doing, pushing this, and you just think, okay, it's going to be great. And I was a bit underwhelmed. Now, I'm not the biggest Harley fan, so maybe I shouldn't have started with this. And the only reason I did was because when I opened up my preview copies, it was listed first, and I just started at the top. Are there good things about it? Yeah. Like, overall, I like the way the art looks in terms of it looks like a very animated style. But that being said, I don't know that it necessarily, I can point to any part of the art and go, that's a very good rendered Scarecrow or Jonathan Crane, or that's a very good rendered, Harley Quinn. Everything. I mean, I guess it's just one of those situations where Simone DiMeo, I guess the art is really good because the sum of the parts is, you know, so much greater as a whole when taken in aesthetically. But when I look at it, the individual images, they don't do much for me. So it's almost the impression, or when you take the art and the line work in conjunction with the Tamara Bond villain's colors, that it all works very well. And it looks very cohesive, and it looks like a package, and it goes very well with the covers that they picked for this issue. And it also suits tonally the story that Stephanie Phillips is trying to tell in the plot. But when I look at individual pages and I start going deeper and doing, you know, a deeper look on the art, I don't know. It's just, again, it's just a theme you're going to hear me saying over and over. I mentioned it with Mike Perkins. I just don't feel like most of the art I've seen to this point in Future State is up to these individual creators' standards. Like, I've seen these individual creators do better, do more. So again, I just don't know if it's editorial timeline, if it was crunched down or what, but it's just, I feel a little underwhelmed. But I do agree that, yes, and I've talked about this on a lot of other episodes I've done where I've reviewed Harley Quinn stuff. Yeah, I don't care for the zany Harley. I've never been a fan of Harley Quinn. And it may all go back to when I did the entire history of Harley Quinn. This was right around issue 10 of her A New 52 series. I literally went and read every single appearance of Harley Quinn. It took me a month, and then reviewed it all. And it was almost like when you're doing an eating contest and you eat so much watermelon or whatever that you'd never want to eat watermelon again. That's how I felt with Harley after I did that episode. So I've just never been a fan. Her whole zany attitude, blah, 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 just doesn't. So yeah, I'll agree with Rocky that this is more attractive because it is, you know, her using her smarts, which is why I like the Harley Quinn White Knight, which is why I praise Cammy Garcia's Joker Harley Criminal Sanity. The problem I have with this, and again, I'll go back to who knows how many ideas that Stephanie Phillips had for this run, like when she goes after Firebug and then she goes after Professor Pig and then it's going after Killer Croc or whoever. In my mind, she's probably like, yeah, we're going to have an issue where we do this. We're going to have an issue where we go after this guy. We're going to have an issue. And now she's condensing that all down. And so I just felt like pacing wise, it doesn't work. It's too choppy. It moves too fast. But what other choice did she have? You know, so I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. I'll go ahead and read the second issue because, like I was saying before, it's only one more issue. Might as well, you know, finish it off. What are your thoughts there, Nick?
I recently became a fan of Harley Quinn based on the anime TV show and Birds of Prey movie. Since the original animated series, she's never struck me as an interesting character. I do like her now. I love the story to this one. This is probably my favorite book of the week. It was also the first one I read, just because I like the idea of her telling how to take someone down while it's being done, like a heist film, and that way, the way they would, you know, show at the same time it's actually happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cool idea to take them all down and then leading up to Black Mask. So I almost like the way this one felt really quick. And then the next one, I assume, will just be Black Mask, which will be fun. It confused me a little bit being the first book I read because I'm like, how possibly far in the future could this be if Harley Quinn is still young and so is Jonathan Crane? Maybe it's the way they're drawn, but it's like, oh, is this like a year after the last issue of Harley Quinn I read? Like,
yeah, well, that's the other part about Future State. They're all, it's not even, they're not even all happening at the same time. We're all just,
I thought they would at first. This one futures. Doesn't feel futuristic at all. Like, this one feels like, I don't know, don't they reference the magistrate in this one too? I guess not.
Yeah, yeah.
But the magistrate's also, I don't know. I'm confused about Future State.
I'll add to that. I'll say that one thing I liked about the Harley Quinn is that I really don't care if I learn anything about the magistrate. I was entertained by Harley. This is a character-driven story where it's Harley's intellect and her zaniness, and I'm actually curious to see how successful she is. How good is she if Batman's not around? Because we know in Future State Batman's not around. We know Harley's got something up behind her sleeve. We know she's going to somehow probably get the upper hand on Scarecrow. There are so many questions I have that are very simple questions. This is a simple story, yet it's my questions all have to do with the character and how she's going to get out of it. And I'm really curious. That's why I feel the last time I feel like this, like I'm reading Daredevil. Like this is a self-contained story. I don't even care if it's part of the, I don't care where it fits in. I'm just looking forward to how this arc ends.
Yeah. When we reviewed this on New Comics Wednesday, spoiler free, Manny talked about how much he loved it as well. And it just reminded me, Rocky, cause you were saying, you know, how good is she? My whole thing was she seemed to get captured by the magistrate pretty quickly. Whereas in Heroes in Crisis, we saw her take on Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman and escape, no problem. And Manny's response to that was, well, she's a lot older now, so maybe she didn't have the quickness that she did back then.
And of course, one was written by Tom King.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, all right, we're going to move on to the Flash Future State number one. It's written by Brandon Vietti, who's a writer who I've never read before. I think he comes from the world of TV or animation. Dale Eaglesham, longtime DC artist, handles the art. We have Mike Atea, who works with Dale a lot, especially on the recent Shazam series. And then Steve Wands on letters. Mike Atea doing the colors, if I didn't make that clear. Let's start with you, Nick. What were your thoughts on Flash?
The last Flash issue I read was part of the Button, or whatever that storyline was. I know very little about the Flash. I do know, you know, about the legacy, you know, like Jay Garrick and all the other characters who are there. It's kind of a, like, I don't know, I guess it doesn't matter what was happening before this, right? It's just jumping into this new story.
Yep. Nothing that was happening before this had tied in with this. This was all new stuff. So if you felt lost, so did I. And I read the Flash every month.
Well, it was cool to have like Team Flash, you know, like all of them, all different ages and stuff. And, you know, trying to rescue Wally, who was, what one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, isn't that what he calls himself at the end? Which one? I forgot the name of it. Pestilence or something? Is that? I think it's a simpler word than that.
He's famine.
Yeah, famine. That's it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the whole.
That's why he's feeding on people.
Yeah. But that was, I don't know. The feeding on people actually reminded me of the first Constantine story with the Feast of Friends. Just the visuals and stuff. In fact, I like the art quite a bit. This is probably my favorite art of the week. But yeah, it was pretty cool to see all the legacy Flash guys together and how just, yeah, even with their little psychic thing, Wally's like owning everyone. So it'll be interesting to see how they take care of it.
So having, you know, not really knowing that much about the Flash or certainly read anything recently, like, did you enjoy it? Do you think
It was a fun, one of the quicker moving comics I'd say this week, and it was enjoyable to read an action comic.
Gotcha. What about you, Rocky? What are your thoughts
on the Flash? I actually found myself surprised by actually not being pissed off that it's another comic book shitting all over Wally West. it didn't actually bother me. And to be honest with you, I actually found this to be, I didn't mind jumping in the story sort of in the middle of things. We filled in the gaps. We find out that, we found out, unfortunately, what happens to Impulse and the guilt from that. And we know almost within like the first five or six pages, we know that Wally is not himself, that Wally is not actually evil, or he's evil, but his mind is being controlled somehow. He's being manipulated. So this is not people complaining that this is shitting on Wally West. That's not entirely accurate. I think that's being a little bit disingenuous to the narrative as it's first presented to us. I actually think this does a good job of actually incorporating all of the Flash family. And I'm going to say that I've more plot substance and more character-driven motivations here are already present than in probably, I would say, you know, I don't want to crap all over Joshua Williamson, but I wasn't a fan of his run. I like this better than anything I read from Joshua Williamson, his entire Flash run, straight up. But then I don't think that's a high compliment per se, because I don't think Joshua Williamson's Flash was very good. So, but honestly, I'm actually, I was pleasantly surprised because the art's fantastic. I love the art. Look, I know that Future State, we're jumping into the future. I'm not a big fan of time jumps in comics. I don't think it's worked for DC in the past. I don't think it's ever worked for DC in the past, but that's another conversation. Suffice to say, if we're going to have this time jump, this is actually interesting. I'm already getting a sense that this story is going to move faster than a lot. I like the fact, I think it's a good thing that Future State, we're going to get these stories and they have to wrap up in two or three issues. I think that's a good thing because it's going to test the writers, because too many of them get into this habit of expecting that they're going to drag things out for six issues, for 12, for 20. I think that's a bad habit. They got to learn to tighten their stories, because that proves their mettle, in my mind. And yeah, so overall, again, I like it. And I get some sense where this storyline is going. And I like the sense that Barry and Wally are equals. Barry thinks of Wally like an equal. There's a sense here that it's heading somewhere. And again, another comic book that I just puts a smile on my face, and I'm in for the next issue.
All right, Trevor, your turn. I think you have a differing opinion, I'm guessing.
Oh, of course I do. I'm going to be quote unquote disingenuous to the narrative and say that as a Flash fan, I don't care. DC needed to read the room. I'm tired of Wally West nuts being dragged through a sea of glass. I'm over it. We've seen a very similar storyline to this obviously happen with like the Black Flash, I believe it was called. It's already been done. Nothing about this was original. I found it tropey. I felt like it looked like a 90s comic, and there's a reason we're not in the 90s anymore. Surprise, it's 30 years later. Stop using 90s art aesthetics for the entirety of the book. I actually normally really like Dale Eaglesham, was not overly happy with the art in this book. Actually, when they take off the masks, all of the male characters look exactly the same, but with different hair colors and slightly different hairstyles, which I'm not fond of. That's an inherent laziness that you'll find sometimes in comics. I mean, like, ironically, I've had a big problem with like dialogue a lot in Future State. I think this had some of the quote unquote better dialogue, although that sort of tropey splash page where everybody on the page needs to get a line of dialogue because it looks cooler is old. I'm done with it. You know, it's just everybody doesn't need to have a cool jazzy line when they pop out of the portal. Like it doesn't do me any good. I was just bored, man. I think Brandon Vietti, I think he's one of the writers on the Young Justice television show, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Which is where a lot of these writers are coming from, like animation and TV. For these Future State books, and ironically, most of them suck at dialogue, which should be their bread and butter working in TV. But overall, I'm just like, and this didn't do anything for me. Although I think most of Future State was meh, I think this actually borderlines on below meh. I just particularly do not like the opening scene at all. I think that was supposed to be a really sort of exciting hook. But I found it really messy. And there's just a lot going on. And for speedsters, I felt like the characters didn't look like they were moving in the slightest. So not super fond of this Flash. And I only read this one because of previews. I didn't buy it, or review copies or whatever. I don't even think I'm going to be reading the next issue, to be honest with you, let alone picking it up.
All right. So interesting, because I agree with some of what you said, and I'm 180 degrees on the other. So I'm going to start with the art, because I'm a big fan of Dale Eaglesham, and I thought his art on Shazam never looked better. And that was the most recent thing he did. Mm-hmm. And now here we go with Future State Flash. I've never seen it look worse. You want to talk about, you know, lazy art. I was going to bring up the same point about the faces looking the same. There's a scene where Jay Garrick and Max McGee, you know, the Golden Age Flash and Max Mercury, are sitting on a couch next to each other. They both have white hair. They're both, you know, older gentlemen. They look like they could be brothers. They look like they might even be twins. They look so much alike. I'm like, I mean, you want to talk about lazy with the face. He's also drawing the same body type over and over. Max should be taller and thinner than Jay. Jay's a little shorter and, you know, just smaller in stature. So I didn't care for the art. And I guess because it's future and it's, you know, drab and dreary or what have you, so many times, you know, we see the characters looking downcast with the big shadows around the eyes. You don't even see the eyes. It's just their eye socket is all filled with shadow. It just felt lazy. I thought the thing about Eaglesham's art that I usually like is there's such a fineness to his line. And it lets you see a lot of the detail. He's inking himself here. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe he was rushed. I don't know. But the line weights are so heavy. And you know, you talked about the opening scene where it looks like nobody's moving. Well, that's what happens when you get these heavy line weights. It grounds the art. And sometimes you want that, but that's not what you want when you're drawing Flash. It's the reason why Brett Booth's art, I always feel, works so well with Flash and looks so kinetic, because he uses such a fine line. So yeah, it didn't work. That being said, the opening scene is actually, I think, the best part of the comic, even though, yeah, it is maybe paced a little frenetically, and you might have to read it twice. But I kind of like that, because it did give the feel that they are, even though this is a group of characters that work together a bunch, they are sort of, they don't have their speed. And so everything is sort of chaotic. They've lost their speed. I don't know if anybody's mentioned that, and obviously it's a spoiler, but we're doing spoilers here. So they're, you know, attacking and trying to get things that they need to go after Wally, who's been possessed. And they're doing it in a way they've never had to do it before, because they don't have their powers that they're used to having. So yeah, it is going to be a little messy. It is going to be a little chaotic. So, and I did like all the little Easter eggs, you know, Rainbow Raider. And at the end we see Barry Allen go into his workshop, if you will. And he's got a bunch of different weapons from the Rogues that he's going to use to try to get, you know, to free Wally. But I'll go back to what Trevor said. And the thing I agree with most of what you said is about Wally being screwed over again. And I get what Rocky's saying, that we learned pretty early on, because I felt, I was like, really, we're doing this again? Wally's getting screwed over again? Really? You haven't learned the lesson, DC? And then we do learn that, yeah, he's not in control of his faculties. But even that is in my mind, diminishing the character. Oh, so it's not that Wally's doing it of his own free will, or he's deluded or something like that, like in, you know, Heroes in Crisis, but rather he just wasn't strong enough to keep this from happening to him again, you know? And that's, to me, still diminishes the character. I'm tired of it. And Wally's not even my Flash. Barry Allen's my Flash. Barry Allen's the Flash that I grew up with. If I had to choose between one of the two, I used to always pick Barry Allen. But now I'm starting to feel so bad about how much crap Wally's had to put up with over the years. I almost want to say, okay, let's put Barry on the shelf for a while and bring Wally back. Because I do think that the emotional weight of the moment in Rebirth when Wally came back was like that had so much weight to it. It had so much potential, and I feel like DC kind of squandered that potential and didn't follow through on that. So ultimately I would say I was disappointed in this issue. You know, you hear Dale Eaglesham art on Flash, I'm expecting greatness, didn't get it. Pacing was uneven, and yeah, it just, I'm tired of Wally being dragged. Like, is it a cool story? Yeah, it is. Is it derivative? Yeah. But ultimately, the failures with Wally again being the bad guy, and the art, to me, makes this one below average. So I just, yeah, couldn't get into it. All right, back to, oh, actually, I'm going first now, because it's my favorite character, Superman of Metropolis. And that being said, this isn't actually a Superman comic. This is John Kent as Superman. It's written by Sean Lewis. We have art by John Timms, colors by Gabe Eltab. Letters by Dave Sharp. Best thing about the book, the colors. Letters by Dave Sharp are also done really well. I know a lot of people talked about the John Timms art looking really great. And, you know, maybe it does, but I couldn't get over. And again, you know, maybe this is just my own bias, character bias. First of all, as John as Superman, I actually enjoyed more than I thought I would. But to me, I don't care who you are. Who is being Superman? They've got to have a cape. They've got to have a cape. Or if not a cape, then maybe a 90s leather jacket. I only say that because when Superman, Kal-El died, right, and you had the four Supermen replace him, well, three of them had a cape, and then you had the Metropolis kid, who eventually, you know, turned out to be Kal-El, the clone that's half Lex Luthor, half Superman. He was the only one that didn't have a cape. He had a 90s punk rock jacket or whatever, and he was always my least favorite of the four that replaced him. And so, yeah, the fact that John doesn't have a cape really, really bugged me. And the other part is that this is not just a Superman story in the book, John Kent as Superman. There's a couple of backup stories that I felt were really below average. So while I was sort of impressed and sort of okay with the voice that Sean Lewis gives to John Kent, and also Kara Zor-El, Supergirl, who is in this book as well. I would almost say they could have called it Superman and Supergirl of Metropolis. And this goes back to the whole timeline thing. We've got another future state title called Superwoman, which takes place years and years and years, if not decades after this, where that's on the moon. She's still Supergirl here. and she's actually against some of what John does. So the story itself with John shrinking Metropolis down, again, kind of disappointing to see him kind of sucked into the trap. It's what Brainiac wanted all along, was for John to do this, and he kind of just followed the numbers. So I do see the value in that from Sean Lewis, basically kind of showing us the inexperience of John Kent. But when I see Superman on a book, I see that name, I expect Superman, not John Kent. Now, I knew it was going to be John Kent, obviously, because I had read the solicits and I, you know, knew everything that was going on with it. And like I said, I think Sean Lewis does do a good job of getting the voice and the earnestness of John Kent here. But it's kind of all over the place. You know, like there's certain things I like about it. There's certain things I don't. The John Timms art is okay. Not great. I feel like the line work is good, but and again, this might go back to just how much real estate you have on the page to tell the story. I feel like the art is crowded, you know, like individually, when you look at the panels, they're done well, but there's so many panels on the page and the panel layouts and the bombasticness of it. You know, a lot of times that stuff works really well. And I complimented the colors. And when we see John, the page where John actually shrinks Metropolis, there's all these Kalexes out and there's a lot of lightning and everything. And yeah, it looks cool. But then overall, when you look at it as a whole, it's busy. And the entire book feels like that. The art feels like that. Even when we go to the Fortress of Solitude, there's all these, you know, extraneous lines in the background to show off the ice. And and maybe it's the fact that, like Trevor was saying earlier with Swamp Thing, it's so much of an info dump. We're getting so many words on the page between all the detail he tries to put in the art and the backgrounds and all the word balloons and the exposition boxes. It's like, man, give me a second here. You know, it's daunting. I could see somebody picking this up, you know, off the rack and saying, oh, do I want to check out this? Who's this new younger looking Superman? And flipping through it and going, I don't want to read this. It just looks like a wall of text. You know, it's just so, so busy. So ultimately it didn't work for me. And it's kind of disappointing. I am curious. The thing that I'm most curious about is in terms of the resolution of this story is how it does lead to Supergirl, Superwoman leaving Earth, because it is mentioned in next week's Superwoman comic, the dynamic between John and his cousin. Because, you know, even though Supergirl is technically older than Superman, because she got here later and he, you know, basically passed her in age, which, you know, is not a thing that could happen in our reality, but it happens in DC Comics history. And then she was always subservient to him, which DC's been playing into that. She never really felt like Superman's going to have his chance to be the protector of the planet. She thought she would get her chance, but now she's been passed over in favor of John Kent. And that dynamic is the only thing that really has me interested to move forward. The second story, it's written by Brandon Easton. The art is by Valentin Delandro. Colors are by Marissa Louise and letters are by Dave Sharp. And it's Mr. Miracle, but it's not the Mr. Miracle. It's not the Scott Free Mr. Miracle. It's Shiloh Norman, and his identity is even known. And it's basically, okay, now that Metropolis is in a bottle, basically it's become like a bottled city of Kandor. What are the repercussions of that? I don't care about this character. I don't know why DC chose to use Shiloh Norman instead of Scott Free. I'm not the biggest Mr. Miracle fan, but I know people that are, but they're not going to care because it's Shiloh Norman and they're fans of Scott Free. So I don't know why they decided to do this. And I thought the art was atrocious, really thick lines, very static, it doesn't feel like there's any movement. I didn't think the color work was particularly good. I just felt like the story was a failure on all levels. Don't even think I'm going to read part two. And then the last story is The Guardian, which I'm looking for the credits here. I thought this one was okay. The artwork is a little stylized, but it wasn't bad. It's written by Sean Lewis, so it's also you know, the same as the first story. Oh, Cully Hamner, I should have recognized his artwork, and Michael Avon Oeming. So no wonder the art looked so uneven. Laura Martin does the colors and Ann World Design does the letters. So I don't know. I guess I think the art from pages 1 through 7 by Cully is decent, and the art from 8 to 12 by Michael Avon Oeming is not, which is no surprise because I've never cared for Oeming's art. But I think the Guardian is an interesting character. This one interested me a little more because it's looking at kind of the repercussions or the consequences of Metropolis being shrunk down, but from the aspect of, you know, this is basically, in this story, Guardian is basically a glorified police officer. So how are the authorities, the powers that be, going to deal with the people that are basically panicking because the world has been shrunk down, or their city's been shrunk down into a bottle? So it was okay, maybe a little less than average. So when you take it all into account, you know, this is the book I was looking forward to the most, or maybe I should say I had the most hopes for, because I am such a big Superman fan, and it let me down on pretty much every level. So wasn't a fan. What about you, Nick? What'd you think?
Okay. Of course, it's still a Superman story. Isn't that the point? Is that if this is future state, then we're getting like different people being Superman?
He's so bad at it, though.
Yeah, but he is terrible at it. It's because I like the part of the story where like he's being, you know, criticized for being only half Kryptonian, which makes me think of Spock, and you know, half Vulcan, you'll never be as good, blah blah blah. And that ends up being his strength in the end, because the new version of Brainiac, built from his skin or whatever, is able to control only true Kryptonians. So that was my favorite part. I didn't even notice he wasn't wearing a cape until he was fighting Supergirl. I thought she ripped it off or something. Swing him around, because I'm always so distracted by that stupid belt. I really hate the belts. Like, I know people find the shorts cheesy and stuff, and the belt needs to be there to break up the coloring so he's just not blue the entire way down. Like, but I guess it's an improvement from the movies where he has a single dot and he's just blue over the entire body, but I hate that look. I hate that more than not having a cape, that stupid belt. Give the red shorts back. I know, haven't they done that in the actual comic line?
Yep.
For a while, didn't Bendis bring back the shorts?
Yeah, the underwear, they're back.
Yeah, I really hate his... I mean, this guy's costume is Superman except for the cape and the shorts, basically. And then as far as... Has the Guardian always been a shield thrower?
I don't ever remember him. Well, actually, I take that back. Yeah, yeah, okay. He would throw a shield. It's not like the Captain America shield where it bounces around.
Well, there's one where he goes back to catch it. I noticed that panel. I'm like, huh. I mean, I know a lot of heroes are similar to a lot of heroes on the other side and on the same side and all that stuff. But there's one of them where it definitely like comes back to his hand. I was like, huh. So that's my reaction overall. It is interesting. I've never really read a Superman comic where the military shows up at the Fortress of Solitude, but I also haven't. There's obviously decades of Superman I haven't read, but
having the military be against them, it's very Zack Snyder. So maybe maybe subconsciously that's why I hated this. What about you, Rocky? What were your thoughts?
I do hate Zack Snyder.
I always find it interesting that DC, in a very desperate attempt to make the Superman family actually interesting, they're trying to create this artificial tension, which frankly, I don't think is true to the characters. I don't think for one second that Supergirl and Superboy are getting into a pissing match over who gets to carry the mantle. That's just absolute nonsense. I don't buy that, but maybe as the story progresses, I'll buy into it a little more. It just amazes me. They make Supergirl a Red Lantern. Like, what was that, in the New 52? They make her angry. So now she's going to be a resentful blonde bitch who's going to get all upset because old aged up John Kent, who's now naturally older now, he's going to take over Superman. And she's so upset, she's going to take all of the displaced person on Earth and go to the moon of all places. it's the whole thing, that aspect of it, I just shake my head. It's just... I just think that's, I don't quite buy into that. But having said that, I think the story here is even, it's kind of interesting. I don't mind it. The idea that, you know, remnants of Brainiac is combined with this other whatever to create this brain cell. It's rather, I think it's a little, it's interesting. I actually think that John Kent made a big mistake here. I think he made a really stupid mistake in shrinking Metropolis. And while we could say that's bad writing, it's I think that it might just show John Kent as a flawed character. I think he made a mistake having to shrink Metropolis in order to overcome the brain cell infection that seems to be overcoming the citizens. So he made a decision here where it makes him look like a he may have made a mistake that puts him at odds with Supergirl. So maybe I can see them reaching a disagreement on that. So, and he's also at odds with the military. So I think this first issue, it established the stakes. It established what some tensions are going to be. It was a little bit unclear to me if Supergirl was upset with Superboy Superman, I guess, because she was manipulated by the brain cells character. But then after the manipulation of the brain cells stopped, she still seemed to be upset with him. So I think the writing got that unclear. On the one hand, they seemed to control Supergirl. I wasn't sure at times if she was actually being herself or if she was being manipulated. So I thought that was a little unclear, particularly. I agree with you, Jace, that the art seemed very clustered. It seemed very, very, there was a lot on the page here. Having said that, there was a lot of story to tell. I was impressed with that. There was a 2-page spread where it showed the big hole where Metropolis was. I thought that was actually quite impactful the way it progressed to that, showing this huge gap where Metropolis was. My favorite character is Supergirl here. I actually really like her. I love her outfit. She's got the cape. Not surprisingly, she looks best. She's got the cape. She looks hot. I like the fact that she's got a little bit of an attitude, and I'm inclined to agree with her position on this. So overall, I'm happy with it. Again, I'm pleasantly surprised. I can pick apart the characterization I already have. Mr. Miracle was a waste. The wrong Mr. Miracle. It reminds me of during Final Crisis where the colorist accidentally colored the wrong skin color on Mr. Miracle because it was supposed to be the black Mr. Miracle, Shiloh Norman and not Scott Free. But in any event, that's kind of a waste of pages. And I'm not interested in Mr. Miracle. And the Guardian story, I don't mind. Yeah, I actually was more interested to see Jimmy Olsen. Jimmy Olsen, he looks like he's aged rather badly. Yeah. Per Jimmy Olsen, you know, the guy looks like shit no matter what, no matter how old he is. And at least he got rid of that goddamn bow tie. But that basically sums up my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I do sort of feel like something you said made me realize this. Yeah, John Kent, he's getting a bad rap. You know, first he gets aged up, and now he's, you know, makes a really bonehead move here. And it got me thinking, you know, Scott Snyder just came out recently and said that there's big plans for Wally West, and he wants to sort of redeem Wally. We've seen that in some kind of sneak preview talks of Infinite Frontier, and the next Flash title is going to start in March. I think DC realizes the mistake they have made, to use Trevor's words, by continuing to drag Wally West's balls through the broken glass. So he's finally going to get redeemed. And maybe now John Kent's going to be the one. John Kent is going to be the Wally West of the 2020s, where he's going to be the one that continually gets screwed over by DC. Ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway, not to go off on a tangent, but Trevor, what are your thoughts on the Superman of Metropolis?
It was pretty trash. I mean, generally I enjoyed the art, and I think the complaint about it being crowded is actually largely because there's so much text that what is there on the page is just fucking covered by word balloons and monologue captions. There's just so much. Like, this is the epitome of what I was saying earlier about Future State books being super exposition heavy. I was bored to shit by the end of the first page, to be quite frank with you. I actually did generally like the art. I thought the characters' designs were cool. There was some good work with camera and layout. I thought it drew the eye quite well. But I can see why you guys have that complaint, largely because I think the captions just blocked up so much page space that.
Well, again, even beyond that, like when you look at some of the pages, even when there's nothing in the background, he drew like these little circuit designs, and it just makes it look busy, even beyond. But yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but. You know, to go beyond that, it's like he couldn't leave any negative space.
I mean, that's just his style. You know, I wasn't off put by that. Like I said, I think most of it was just like there's so much text that there's no room for the art to breathe. Aside from the fact that text also just slows the shit out of this book. I'm so bored. I am so bored with you telling me what's happening rather than showing me. It's fucking comic books. It's a visual medium. Stop telling me everything. I'm so damn tired of that. Like, and maybe I'm just frustrated, right? Because, you know, I just put out a first issue where one of my main concerns was literally not doing this. And I see professionals in the New York Yankees of fucking comic books doing this. Like, this is insane. Anyway, sorry, little rant over. I found the dialogue, like the cadence of the dialogue, horrible. Like, John speaks in these super short Batman-esque sharp sentences. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, was he
Superman?
Yeah. Like, was he accidentally raised by Bruce while he was off in space for whatever? And regarding like showing John making decisions, he's been in the superhero business for 10 years now. I don't care if he wasn't Superman for all 10 of those years. The whole premise of like these heroes taking on like sidekicks, John being the sidekick but prior to this, is that by the time they get to the role, they're better than their predecessor, right? Because they've had the experience. They've had less of the growing pains because they've had somebody to guide them through, particularly Superman, probably being the greatest sort of example, supervisor, guiding force in all of DC Comics. So you would think John would be much more well-adjusted than literally doing the thing that Brainiac has done to Metropolis for him, right? I'm also dead tired of that stupid fucking eugenics trope in sci-fi where they're like, oh, but you're not enough of this. Who gives a shit, man? Like, yeah. Already in 2020, people would probably champion John for technically being like bispecial, I guess we'll say. Like, fucking 10 years from now, they'd love it even more. It's so dumb. I'm so over that. Like, if you're going to do that in 2020, have like a compelling angle to it. It's dead in the water. Like, dead. I'm just like, I'm sorry. This was just, I like the art. I'll give Tim's the credit for the art. I also think he did some really good stuff with camera as well regarding, you know, how he's visually telling the story. But Jesus Christ, was this writing horrible. It was so bad. And the worst part is, you know, if the writer of the story is a screenwriter, like most of the other people who are coming in to do these Future State books, I would never want to watch a single thing this person has written.
No, Sean Lewis is a comic writer. He's done work for Aftershock.
Well, either way, I'm not going to touch those either now because he hasn't like the dialogue is horrible. It is horrible. I mean, even aside from it being info, I just can't even say that because almost all the dialogue was info dumpy, actually. So yeah. It just wasn't good. I didn't like the stuff with character. I don't think that John and Carl would have this squabble over who takes over the mantle. I actually think that out of any sort of, you know, lineage in the DC universe, if anything, there would be a sort of mutuality to the role of the head of the super family. You know, that if Clark were not there, I feel like they would take it in spades and be very cooperative. Like, I'm so done with creating like artificial conflict for the sake of artificial conflict. I'm so over that. Like, these writers need to stop playing with those tropes. And if they do, they better have a unique bender to it. But this was bad. It was a badly written comic, man. Like, and frankly, I guess I'm being like really unprofessional by going off on that much of a rant of this guy's writing, but Jesus, man.
What about any thoughts on the Mr. Miracle or Guardian backups?
Dude, that the art in that Mr. Miracle book was some of the worst I've ever seen in professional comics, honestly. Like, the camera setup was boring. Layouts were bad. I hated the style. I hated the style 100%. I feel like I could have done a better job, and I fucking suck, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I literally, it's one of those things where there's been something in this Superman book particularly, but pretty consistently throughout most of Future State, that there is something about each story that like is just so off-putting and makes me like consistently check to see how many pages I have left until I'm done. And almost this entire book between all of the stories very much made me feel that way. I mean, the Guardian thing, it's just like, if you're going to do Guardian, it's got to be somebody with some crazy out there vision that's going to do, you know, not to overuse Tom King's name, but like what he did for Mr. Miracle. I don't want to see the Guardian unless somebody has that level of idea for him. Yeah. It's just, and I also just wasn't a fan of the art. It was really odd where like the artist tried to really spot his blacks. And then when he would fade away his blacks, it got super choppy. Yep. And I was just annoyed to shit the whole time because he's like really riding this, frankly, sharp fence of going into sort of aspects of realism and shading and like sticking down into cartoonisms. I this was just a bad book. I'm not going near this for whatever the next issue, however many other issues there are. Count me out, man. In the words of Randy Jackson, it's a no from me, dog.
All right, well, let's move on to Wonder Woman. The next Wonder Woman, it's not called the next Wonder Woman like the next Batman is, but it is the next Wonder Woman. It's Joelle Jones, writer and art, Jordi Belair on colors, Clayton Cowell on letters. And we'll kick it off with you, Rocky. You're such a big Wonder Woman fan. I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about this one.
Well, let me be blunt. I had some concerns about this when I heard that Joelle Jones was going to write it, because I had I was really excited when I heard Joelle Jones was going to be writing Catwoman back during the Tom King time on Batman. And it started off, I thought her first few issues of Catwoman showed potential, and then it quickly went downhill from there. I love her work on Lady Killer. I love her art on Lady Killer, her independent work, fantastic. And I had some concerns about pretty much everything. Her pacing is off, her story, the way Lady Killer was good, but her Catwoman was all over the place. 26 issues on one villain that went nowhere. Art, there was no pacing, was terrible. Structure was terrible. It was very much a disappointment. And I don't think she even had, I think she had minimal editorial interference, so she didn't even have that excuse. So I was really concerned hearing this. Again, I got to say, this opening issue, I'm actually really curious to hear what your guys' opinion is on this issue, especially you, Trevor, because what you just finished complaining about some of this future state, because I actually think I love this. It's called Hell to Pay, this issue. This Joelle Jones doesn't insult the reader. We jump right into it. We're introduced to her. And this is a Wonder Woman that I love. She's got a personality. She actually has a personality. I could care less. I'm so sick of Diana, Wonder Woman. Diana Death Metal number 7, as far as I'm concerned, she should have just been killed. She cowardly gave up to the Batman Who Laughs. I thought it was disgraceful, her conduct and how Death Metal 7 ended. I thought it was an insult to the character. Leave her dead. Leave her gone. I don't care if she ever returns. Yara Flores has an attitude. She's sarcastic. She's actually fun. There was humor in this issue. This issue, it starts off right away. She basically just wants to travel to Hades. This is a Wonder Woman. This is a Yara Flores. Yara Flores, she's Jamaican. She's gorgeous. She's gorgeous. She's got some body weight to her. She's hot. She wants to go into Hades to rescue one of her sisters. And she meets a fairy on the way. And she's got to get this horn to get into Hades. And then she ends up trying to access this mythological subway with all these different creatures. And then pay to cross through the almost like the River Styx into Hades, and it's I really thoroughly enjoyed this. This was a fun ride. I thought the art was great. Some of the backgrounds she were missing, but I thought the coloring was great. The way that Joelle Jones draws the Amazon forest, I thought was gorgeous. The way she drew the myth Pegasus, or I guess the Pegasus has the name Jerry, I thought that was great. I thought there's more kinetic. She draws this Wonder Woman better than she drew Catwoman. There's more kinetic energy here. She could still work on some of her action sequences. I think it's still a work in progress for Joelle Jones, but she's overall, man, this is a gorgeous issue, and it's already gone to a second printing. I have to get that second printing with her. it looks amazing. Anyways, I'm impressed. As I'm talking about it, I would have to say this is probably tied with Harley Quinn for my favorite so far. I'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. What were your thoughts, Trevor?
Yeah, I actually thought this was one of the better issues of Future State for sure. It wasn't super bogged down with exposition. I felt like Joelle Jones did a really good job with the delivery of information, where she actually didn't overexpose this issue so that, you know, you could figure out what happened through the story as a story should be told. But hey, who am I to criticize? I also want to give a lot of credit to her art. I thought the art was actually really good, like dumb good. This art was, I'll speak like Yoda, I guess. Dumb good this art was. what I really love is her use of layout. I think it's exciting. It, along with the colors, helps certain things to pop off of the page. I loved the battle scene with the Hydra, where she has this really beautifully done, almost Japanese painterly style background. And then when she gets into the thick of it and the Hydra appears, it becomes this really cool sort of army green, and it brings the proper elements to the forefront and helps you sort of focus on the moving elements at hand. I like Yara Flora as a character. I actually did not expect this story to be as decent as it was, honestly. I think she, like Rocky said, she actually has a lot of attitude. I really love that. And I also, she's Brazilian, I thought, not Jamaican, right?
I apologize. Yes, that's right.
Because yeah. I know that DC is definitely trying to cater to their sort of, now we know this massive Brazilian audience that they have. But I mean, she's a super rad character. She's badass. She kicks ass and takes names as I feel like Wonder Woman should. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is great. And I think one of the things that sort of gave Joelle Jones that space to succeed in the writing is that she could kind of play with Yara Flor from scratch. I mean, we talk about Lady Killer. It was her creation and the sort of downfalls of her Wonder Woman. I think what makes Yara Flor so great is I'm sure DC just kind of gave her some very sort of general things that need to be included about maybe her heritage and her ethnicity and such, and just kind of let Joelle Jones go to town and do her thing. And I think that's what made this character so interesting, frankly, in the same way that she made her protagonist in Lady Killer interesting. And I'm sure that the extra time that they had due to the pandemic and everything just gave her everything she needed to polish up this art. But I actually generally enjoyed it. I actually do regret not picking up a physical copy, if I'm honest with you, which I will probably go back and do and support this book. If only I could like swap this out for some of the other Future State garbage I did decide to buy. That would be beneficial for sure. I will say though, one small nitpick, I hated the cover. I hate the pose on the cover. She looks like she's doing that floss dance or flossing or whatever it's called. I remember I put this on like a thumbnail that I had with Rocky a little while ago, and I just regretted it instantly. Like, actually, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, I might have to like edit that thumbnail and post a new one to this old video that nobody's gonna watch.
You guys know, do you know that her lasso, does she have like, is that like a name for that particular weapon? Like, it's like she's got little balls on the end of her lasso.
A bolo?
Yeah, it's kind of like a bolo.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But really, I also want to give, did Joelle Jones, I'm going to go back. Did she color her work here?
No, it's Jordi Belair.
Dude, Jordi Belair freaking killed it. Jordi Belair smacked these colors out of the house. They're super, super saturated, not a lot of crazy gradients, but I think they were really, really well spotted to give the illusion of texture while also just being really in your face. And when you have all of this sort of cool fighting, conflict, kinetic movement, I think along with like this really sort of dynamic layout of the page, I think it really all plays quite well. And the more I talk about it, actually, the more I think I like this issue. So, yeah, I think I'm actually going to go back and purchase it for myself. It was pretty solid. And again, I will also be fair. I think I might like this issue so much because I hate most of the other issues of Future State. And I'm just like so surprised that something so solid came out of the book that I thought was going to be like on the lower end of the totem pole. So, you know, just sort of acknowledging that potential there, I will cede the floor.
You know, it's so disappointing that I'm the one that seems to be the most down on Future State, because I hated this. I did not. Maybe hate is too strong a word, but I very much disliked it. And here's the thing, like, so let me talk about the artwork first. You know, obviously Joelle Jones, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Rocky. I loved her Lady Killer stuff. Was really excited to have her on Catwoman, and it just, yeah, never went anywhere. It just plodded along and never paid off. So I didn't know what to think here, but you know, the most recent Wonder Woman run by Mariko Tamaki, which we covered extensively on the podcast, was so up and down. So, you know, couldn't be worse than that. Right. So, but I'll get to that, like characterization and, you know, things I had a problem with there, but let's talk about the artwork first. Here we go again, where I think we have another situation where it's just not the creator's best work. And this isn't as egregious as like Dale Eaglesham's work. It's still Joelle Jones. It's still, you know, recognizable as her. There's still, you know, her page layouts, the way she lays the panels out on the page, her cam work, all that is still done well. But I just don't think that the actual line work, the actual rendering is up to her usual standards. There are anatomy problems here and there that I noticed. And that's usually not the case with Joelle. She's usually spot on. And she does use a little bit heavier line weight, and that's fine. You know, I've come to expect that from her. But, you know, particularly on the things like the mythical creatures and such, it was more of a sketchy style than I'm used to her using. So that kind of, you know, I didn't care for that so much. I'm used to her art looking a little bit cleaner. But I don't know that there's anything technically wrong with her art. I don't want to say that, you know, other than the few anatomy mistakes here and there. So I don't want to say it's bad art. It just, I didn't care for this. I don't think it's her best work. And I'll say the same thing with Jordi Belair. Jordi Belair, I think, is, I say this all the time, she's like the best colorist working in comics, be it every year during the Comic Source Awards. She's always second. There's always somebody else there, but she's chronic. Like if you look at her average finish, she's up there. She's number one. Maybe I'll give it to her for 2020, but she's amazing. She's one of the best colorists in the business, bar none. I didn't like the colors here. I felt like the entire book had this over sheen of this green to it. And it's probably done on purpose, but I just didn't care for it. It took me out of the story. It gave off the sense of unease, you know, and I don't know if it was, okay, you're in the jungle, you're in Brazil, everything's green and organic, and that's what we were going for. Instead, I just got this sickly feel of everything being this, you know, greenish tint that just reminded me of like, you know, being sick or being nauseated. I didn't care for it. The whole thing of going to Hades and, you know, the subway station and all that, I didn't care. It just didn't pull me in. I was like, really? This is what we're doing? Seen this before. You only have two issues and you're going to spend all these pages in real estate on this? This is what you want to do? And then that gets me to the maybe the biggest reason I didn't get sucked in is I couldn't relate to Yara Flor. You know, I know she's getting her own TV show and that's great. What we don't know is, and Rocky as a speculator, you know, this, we don't know what people are going to consider. Is this going to be considered her first appearance? Was that really her in Wonder Woman Annual 4? I think every reason this issue sold out and went to a second printing is all because of people thinking, well, maybe this could be considered her first appearance. So I hope you can grab a copy, Trevor. I hope that you're still able to get your hands on one. It might already be disappeared from everywhere. I don't know. But there was just no way in with her. And we know we're getting a Wonder Girl comic starring Yara Flor from Joelle Jones starting in April. Perhaps it wasn't in the March solicitations. Whereas here, this is in the future, right? And she's already been Wonder Woman for a long time, or Wonder Girl and then Wonder Woman. Just like Trevor was saying with John Kent, she's supposed to be a seasoned veteran at this point. She didn't come across like that to me in the story. You know, she still felt a little bit like a sidekick or a little bit inexperienced. And I think that's just an inherent flaw when you do things like time jumps, like Rocky was saying. It's why they're so hard to execute well. You know, you almost feel like this is a story about Yara Flor, who's Diana's sidekick, and Diana's just not on the page. She's not on the screen. She's been kidnapped or removed or whatever, right? Maybe that's who Yara Flor is going to rescue in Hades. We'll find out next issue. It's Diana. I mean, who knows? But she feels like a sidekick to me, and she shouldn't feel that way. She should feel like an established pro, a hero that's been doing it for a long time, and it didn't come across that way to me. So yeah, because I didn't necessarily see it as Joelle's best work, didn't like the color work from Jordi, but although it's technically good and that's what she was told to do, it didn't work for me. And the characterization of Yara didn't work for me either. What I am glad about is that we are getting away from the, you know, we're getting more diversity in these legacy characters. I think that's a good thing. And that speaks more to the business side. And yes, DC has a huge fan base in Brazil. So great. But then the other part of that is, well, then how come there aren't any Brazilian creators working on the book? We know there are a ton of great ones. You know, as much as I'm a fan of Joel Jones' art normally, even though it's not her best work, what about Yvonne Reese on this book? You know, that seemed like a no-brainer to me if you want to get, or Eddie Barrows, you know, instead of putting him on the Robin, Eternal Robin title. It doesn't make sense to me. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. I seem to be the one that's hating on all these books more than anybody, which, you know, what 2021, we're in a mirror universe here. What's going on?
Can I give one small credit too? I know you were talking about like other anatomy issues, but one part of anatomy that I want to give credit, man, Joel Jones drew Wonder Woman like a thick Amazonian woman should be.
Yeah.
That was such a good, I feel, accurate character design.
That's true. She's got the hips.
And part of it is me just being a man, being attracted to it. But like the other part of it is like, I mean, like, you know, I know a lot of Brazilian people, you know what I'm saying? Brazilian women can be very, very busty, especially one as athletic as a Wonder Woman I don't know if she's an Amazon or what, but which I think she is in some capacity. But boy, it was time for a thick Wonder Woman, especially after watching Gal Gadot kind of being this twiggy ass walking around the stage. This is what I want out of a Wonder Woman, that type of physicality. So, yeah, I'll hop back off the soapbox. Sorry to distract, but
all good. Well, what were your thoughts, Nick? Very curious
about. I'm very curious about the non-experts' thoughts. This was my favorite book of the week, and Harley Quinn. I found this the only accessible book. If someone's going to jump, like if this is supposed to be a jumping on point for people, I think the other ones are absolutely not a jumping on point. And this one very much is. Like, I didn't even need to know Diana. I mean, obviously I know Wonder Woman, but I didn't even need to know that Diana existed to enjoy this, where all the other ones are built on so much history, even though they're clearing to be a jump on point with like referencing Brainiac and Jonathan Kent and even referencing all those old Batman villains and Harley Quinn. I liked the art. The thing I always pay the most attention to in all these is story more than even dialogue or art, being a film fan and a screenwriter or a wannabe screenwriter. And one of the things I really liked about it, which is a cliche you see a lot, is the point of the trip to Hades is what you would imagine it to be. You know, like when an alien shows up and it's like, I appear in this form so that I do not scare you. So like, it's, you know, so because at first I was reading it and I'm like, well, Constantine's a book I read a lot and that has hell. And I've never seen Turnstiles going to hell in Constantine, which would be, you know, basically the same. But it's nice to see like, this is how she witnesses it, both with her Greek history, you know, that the dog, the three-headed dog, and the Hades going across the river and all that, very much tied into the Greek history while also having that modern look of the dog just like sleeping in a subway station and having like tiptoe around it. So I found that kind of refreshing. I like when movies, and like it's similar to Men in Black too in that way where it's like, oh, whoa, this place is weird, like, which I'm all for that cliche. So, yeah, I like this one. You're muted.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, maybe that's a part of why I didn't like it. I'm not in for that cliche. It just doesn't interest me. It feels tropey, and when you start mixing, oh, it's the mythological River Styx, but we're gonna mix it up with the modernness of the TSA and having to go through checkpoints and blah, blah, blah. Nah, just tell one or the other. Like, what? Anyway, let's move on to the last book. It's the next Batman. Probably the one that has gotten the most hype and the one that most people were looking forward to. I'm not the biggest Batman fan, as we all know, but I had high expectations because this is written by John Ridley. We have art by Nick Darrington, you know, two people arguably at the top of their game. Colors are by Tamara Bonvillain. Letters are by Clayton Cowles. So had high expectations, and I don't know that this book lived up to them, but we're going to let our resident Dark Knight Nation expert go first. And probably even plug his more in-depth analysis that he did on his own channel. So I'll hand it off to you, Trevor, for next Batman number one, our last book for today's episode.
Sure. You know, as the consistency with Future State, it's just not good. The next Batman story by John Ridley. I mean, it's certainly not at the lowest lows that I've seen some of these Future State books get to, cough, cough, Superman and Metropolis. But it's very meddling. I actually, although, you know, one of the Fox brothers being sort of the next Batman in the legacy was not something I was particularly fond of. I thought that if anybody was going to execute it, it would be John Ridley. He's a world-class screenwriter. And what I speaking of, you know, this odd consistency of screenwriters absolutely failing in dialogue, John Ridley was no exception. I found it really clunky. Again, largely expository, but not nearly as bad as some of these other titles. So by comparison, I give him a little bit more credit that way, I guess. But I was pretty bored. This was the first story that I read in Future State. I found myself constantly, again, looking to see when the story was over. I thought a number of the tropes that were used by John Ridley were just so indulgent and clunky. You know, you have the family member comes back after a journey of self-reflection and growth. The rest of the family resents him for leaving when they needed him most. Okay, I'm over it. Like, I frankly don't care. I'm actually, what's interesting is with most of these Gotham books, I'm more interested in seeing how the magistrate rose to power than like where we are now, because I actually find the concept of the magistrate really interesting. It's like Bruce Wayne fugitive, but like turned up to 11, which as a sort of interesting point of world building, I actually quite like the idea, especially in a city like Gotham that is dominated by people with masks. But like, this story was boring. Like, John Ridley deals with some pretty relatable themes. Like I said, the family drama aspects of sort of the effects of being underprivileged and what that's going to do to a child that grows up into it, the sort of desperation that arises from something like that. But they were all just handled so mediocrely that I couldn't even give him that much credit. Nick Darrington's art was lackluster. Usually artists that are fairly low detailed are very skilled at setting up the sequential narrative and playing with you know, those types of I would say technical angles than they would with the sort of rendering detail. And I actually found a lot of camera work to be pretty mediocre, except for maybe the opening scene. And I actually point this out in my review. In the opening scene, it's super dynamic. You have Tamara Bonvillain's colors, who, by the way, was the best part about this issue. Let me give credit where credit's due. Tamara Bonvillain absolutely murdered it. The opening of the issue had a lot of dynamic camera angles and shot sizes that really helped to set up the moment. Although it was tropey, it was obviously the opening where Batman tracks somebody down an alley. Cool, we've seen it before, but visually it was done well. Aside from that, there were just moments like this, the argument between Tim Fox and Luke Fox that I was utterly bored by. It's one of those situations where, again, they're telling me that I should feel a certain way, but they're not showing me. And you could tell me that, I am the spinning image of Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street, and unless you put a mirror in front of my face and show me, I don't care. And that's kind of what it feels like. They're telling us about this family drama. They're telling us about these issues that Gotham is having. I don't care unless you show me. Comics are visual. And like specifically in that sort of dramatic scene, the dialogue was just like choppy, expository, and not in the moment. It didn't pull me in at all. And so I constantly felt detached to almost every major point in the issue. Aside from that, I found the plot super vanilla. Super, super vanilla. Nothing, you know, was absolutely like me ripping my hair out, like it was, for example, in the Superman of Metropolis, but like nothing caught my attention. The only thing that did catch my attention was just how sort of mediocre it was, to be frank. I will give it another try. I mean, you know, this Batman book has been given the privilege of 4 issues, I think, where most other Future State series have not. So I'm going to read this next one. You know, if I like it more, you know, I might consider giving the third a try. If not, that might be the cutoff point. Regarding the other stories, I think the best story in this issue was the Outsiders story. I think it was by Brandon Thomas. And I don't quite know the artist's name. I had never read him before. But I actually thought he did a really, really good job on this issue. I know a couple of people that have told me it's not like his best work. And if this isn't, I actually look forward to reading his best work, because I feel like the artist does an excellent job with camera. I think he does an excellent job with gesture and character acting. It feels very fluid. And I could rave about the art, man, in this issue. I really, really did like it. It's been shot around online quite a bit, but there's this brilliant double page spread of Katana just running through a bunch of goons that really, really caught me. I like the sort of setup in terms of the writing. Sort of how the Outsiders are literally a group of outsiders in the magistrate controlled Gotham trying to shepherd people to safety. You know, it is a pretty interesting trope to include, especially given the circumstances in Gotham. And I felt it was executed fairly well. You know, the writing was also not like amazing. I didn't find myself super in love with it, but I felt the setup good enough to definitely be more excited to give it a second chance in the next issue than I am most other first issues or first of these Future State books. But you know, I felt like he got these character voices pretty well, but again, sort of fell victim to over exposition. Although by comparison to other writers with these Future State books, he does a pretty okay job of not letting that totally muddy down everything that's happening. There's a cool sort of Black Lightning appearance that bears a lot of questions. And what I like is that he's actually leaving questions open for us to explore throughout the narrative of the story, rather than just flooding us with the hows and the whys and whatnot. I like that sort of no pun intended shock, you know, of seeing Black Lightning the way he is. And then regarding the Arkham Knight story, I honestly couldn't even finish it. There was just so much text, so much text and exposition, and internal monologue. Like, I get it. I know, like, Astrid Arkham is like mentally insane, but Jesus Christ, the internal monologue was nuts bad and boring. And I mean, the art was pretty good. I did quite enjoy the art for what it was, although I felt like in the opening scene there was a little bit of confusion with the sort of action. But the art was fairly solid, nice camera setup, nice character design and gestural behavior. But I honestly, I'm sorry, like the writing was just so dense. And by the time you get to the third story in one book and the last one is just so text heavy, I'm just like, no. I'm kind of over it. I need something else. So, you know, overall, the next Batman is, I mean, you have one that's just very, very middle. You have one that I think is, you know, decently higher up on the quality chain. And then you have another one that I actually think is below, which I know is definitely going to be perhaps a mirror image of how Jace felt, per usual. But I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like for anybody that's thinking about dropping $8 on this book, I feel like you should wait until the second issue comes out and kind of test the room and see what people are saying at that point. Because I think even with how much I liked the art in the Outsider story, I don't think this was worth $8, to be quite frank, especially because the physical printing quality on these Future State books are shit. They're absolute shit. They're printing them on newspaper quality print, barely higher than that, maybe. The covers are about as thin as the papers, with this really sort of pedestrian coat of gloss over the front. And in the stories that are in the issues that are just one story per issue, there's like six ads. There's like six pages of ads. And I like, it's not worth $8, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. I guarantee when they start Infinite Frontier, for those of you that are so in or that might be really, really, really interested in at least knowing what's going on, I guarantee you when the Infinite Frontier launches, they're going to put a bunch of these on sale in Comixology. It's more worth your money that way to pay like $1.50, $2, because the physical printing sucks. And so far, the book is not that great. So meh.
Meh. Yeah, meh pretty much sums it up for me when you want to talk about the first issue. And again, like we're praising John Ridley, and rightly so. He's done other things that have been spectacular. The other history of the DC universe is on my list of best things I read in the entire year of 2020. Here's the thing. Like, here's what the first part of the next Batman reminds me of. It reminds me of a procedural TV show, right? Like, it's like a regular old cop show with, you know, the older brother's a cop and the younger brother was training to be a cop, but he left and abandoned the family because something bad happened. Again, it's a story we've all seen, you know, 1,000 times. There's nothing new. There's nothing original here. And it's the difference between John Ridley, screenplay writer, versus comics, right? Like, yeah, maybe read all together, all four parts of a story are going to be great. But when you have, we're only getting the first quarter here and nothing really happens. But it really hit me that, yeah, this is like reading the visual representation of a script for a procedural TV show when you had the one cop go visit the other cop when he was in the batting cage. That's straight out of some kind of cop TV show, right? That's exactly the kind of scenes. Oh, look, this cop used to be the partners and let's put him at a unique location. He's at the batting cages.
Don't put your fingers through the chain.
Yeah, It was just like, I kept waiting for something to happen and nothing ever did. And I'm not going to go on and on about it because, you know, Trevor already kind of summed up my feelings about it as well. But one thing I will add is something I just said previously about multiple books. Here we go with Nick Darrington, who I know can do better than this. This is some of the worst art I've ever seen him do. A lot of the panels don't even have, like, forget about detail in the background. He's not an artist that puts a lot of detail, but there are a lot of these, there's no background at all. It's just the character and then just a flat of color in the back. So again, I'm just wondering what was the timeline AT&T gave these people to do this work? Because this is bad. This is lazy. It's cheap and there's no value to it. Like Trevor was saying, as far as the second story goes, Brandon Thomas, great writer, definitely recommend his work over at Lion Forge that he did on the, I'm drawing a blank on the, what was their superhero line? Catalyst Prime, their Catalyst Prime line. His work there was good. Horizon, his series over at Image was also good. The penciler is Sumit Kumar, S-U-M-I-T, last name K-U-M-A-R. Hadn't seen work from them before. So I'm not a big fan of their aesthetic, but like Trevor said, their line work, the way they lay things out is done. Well, not for me, not their line work, but the way they lay things out, their camera work, interactions, very kinetic style, really, really good. So even though I wasn't a fan of their line work, because again, it's more of a sketchy style and I like more of a clean style, I still was pulled into the story. The art didn't pull me out of it at all. And they're inking themselves, but Ralph Fernandez also handle some inks, and we got the, you know, amazing Jordi Belair on colors as well. Steve Wan's on letters. So yeah, I did enjoy the story. The one thing, the one nitpick I'll have about it is I love Katana's current costume, and she's not so popular of a character that we've seen that costume a lot. The costume she got from whenever the New 52 started. When you talk about the pre-Flashpoint Katana, Rocky may be the only one that knows what it looks like, the red and gold costume with her terrible bowl cut hair.
Yeah.
I hated that costume. It was so bad. And I always loved her new one that Richard Friend helped design, who's another incredible artist and inker. And so I would love to see her in that because it's not like we've seen a ton of it. So I didn't really care for this new costume that they put her in. But yeah, the big hook here, Trevor mentioned it, is seeing Black Lightning show up at the end and wanting to know why the hell does he look like he's just made out of lightning. He looks like Superman Blue. So I'm really curious to see what that's about. And then the last story was actually my favorite. And it wasn't just my favorite in this book. It was my favorite of everything I read for the first week of Future State. So it's written by Paul Jenkins. Let me get the other credits here. And I didn't necessarily have a problem with it being a little dialogue heavy, because that's sort of what we saw with Astrid Arkham in the first appearance that we saw of her by Peter J. Tomasi in the Detective Comics 1000, I think it was, where it was her giving us this narration. And so this to me kind of harkened back to that. And she was also pretty wordy in the Detective Comics run where she showed up, also done by Tomasi with Brad Walker. So I didn't necessarily have a problem with that. And I thought the art by Jack Hebert, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's H-E-R-B-E-R-T. Colors by Gabe Eltab, letters by Rob Lee. I thought the artwork was done very well. And it was just cool because, again, I think we're all sort of leaning toward being more interested in the magistrate than the actual heroes here, or certainly of Batman, because that was so meh in the first story. But here we have Astrid, and she's actually gathering up villains. So it's almost like a sort of a Suicide Squad-esque, you know, she's gathering up villains to fight against them, you know. Dr. Phosphorus and Zaz and Clayface, and certainly we've never seen Zaz on the right side ever, you know, and Killer Croc and all that. So yeah, I kind of liked it. And Jenkins, you know, he's a veteran comic writer. And when I read all these books and I looked at them overall for the first week, and I was overall very, very disappointed when I looked at the story I love the most, it was by the person that I felt like that had the most experience. So it's got me thinking that maybe it's not the best thing to bring in, you know, 95%, 90%, whatever, new creators at once. You've got to have some consistency. You've got to have some continuity, people that kind of know what they're doing. And whereas the inexperienced people like Sean Lewis maybe struggled and it really showed. So I don't know if that has something to do with it or not. But overall, I really liked it. Plus the other thing, I don't know. I think we're all fans of Brian Edward Hill here, but I don't know if anybody ever read his Bonehead series from Top Cow, which was a licensed property. Apparently there are these, it's some big thing of action figures or something in Asia. But anyway, these the bad guys in Magistrate, I can't remember what they're called right now, but the ones with the helmets, God, it's going to drive me crazy not being able to think of whatever it is, but their helmets look like what these Bonehead guys look like. So it's a little circa 2000. But I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. What are they? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? What they're called?
No, not at all.
They mentioned them in investigators. Is that what they are? There's like investigator one, and this one it's investigator two.
Maybe, but.
Well, you didn't even finish reading it, so you wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I've probably tapped out before.
That's what they are. They're called peacekeepers. Yeah. And they're all, so apparently they're like the, I wouldn't go so far as to say generals, but like squad leaders maybe of these units of the magistrate. So in this one, it's Peacekeeper 12. And yeah, he looks straight out of Brian Edward Hill Bonehead character. So yeah, I thought it was the most interesting. I thought it had the most promise. Was it a little expositional and dialogue heavy? Yeah, but apparently they're all going to be. So I'm willing to overlook that a little bit. So yeah, I would rank this as my favorite story. The Katana story was okay. The Batman story was just, yeah, again, below average. It just because it didn't do anything. It didn't go anywhere. And the other thing, why? So Luke calls Tim, and he goes, no, call me Jace. I'm like, what? I'm not Batman. I know I'm not Batman. I'm like, well, what's that all about? And there's no explanation for that either. I thought that was just really weird. That pulled me out of the story for sure.
Especially in like the moment that's supposed to be like the peak of drama and tension for the issue. And then it's just like, yeah, my name's Jace. I was like, first of all, I think in this position, you're not really in a position to make demands here, Tim. Yeah. So first there's that. Then, like you said, it's just like, but why though? Like,
And it's not like they're close. Yeah. Call me Tom. You know, don't call me Tim. Call me Tom. No, call me Jace. Yeah. What? Call me Ishmael. I don't know.
Right.
All right, Nick, what were your thoughts?
I also like the backup story the best. Arkham one, playing, you know, Arkham, I love seeing Two-Face, you know, trying to be a good guy. So it's nice to see that. I'm assuming he won't betray everyone in this situation. The last time I saw him work with someone was Batman, like a year or two ago. But since this is an all villain team, I'm hoping he won't turn them over to the magistrate or something, because Harvey Dent's a two-faced little fellow. The one thing, the thing I liked the least about it was the first story, was the cliche of the first story, where, I don't know, I know this is an important message and you see it in every medium of entertainment where, you know, basically the plot of the Batman, the new Batman, is he tells a bunch of kids in a two-faced gang not to be in gangs. And that's especially amongst minority superheroes. It's like they feel like they always have to tell that story. Like Steve Rogers, Captain America, is fighting Hydra. Sam Wilson, Captain America, is keeping kids out of gangs. Bruce Wayne is fighting Bane. Fox, Batman, is making sure kids don't join gangs of people who dress like Bane. I just feel, I know it's an important thing to tell. It's part of what's actually going on, but I find it very cliched that they throw it into like every superhero of colors book at some point that, oh no, don't join a gang, kids. Mm. Like, I don't know. Maybe I've just seen it in other mediums too, like TV and stuff a lot lately, but it feels like they go out of their way with my, like, yeah, like the biggest example is Sam Wilson Cap running the same time as, Steve Rogers Cap, where Sam Wilson had to be more socially minded and the real Cap stories were being told, even though he was hailing Hydra over in the Steve Rogers book. So.
Well, you're a fan of Brian Edward Hill too. Did you read his Outsiders run?
I have a lot of it left to read, but I have it all.
Gotcha. It was good.
I'm years behind on comics.
Gotcha. I was just curious what you're, cause I even thought when, for some reason, when I, to my discredit, when I first tweeted about us having talked about this book, I tweeted out that Brian Edward Hill had written the Outsider story. He had to correct me. I was like, oh, I knew that because I got it right when I gave credit on the podcast for New Comic Day. But then in between that, going to sleep and getting up the next day, I'd forgotten because I just hear Outsiders and I associate it with Brian Edward Hill, because I do think this did have a little bit of that same quality of storytelling that Brian brings. Mm. So.
Yeah, his Outsiders was good, by the way. I know a lot of people didn't pick it up, but apropos, I guess there was a reason Jace made that mistake, because you guys should go read Brian Edward Hill's Batman and the Outsiders. It was a little bit slow because they forced him to jam all that "you're the villain" garbage in there, but I think given the circumstances, I think he did a really good job at staying focused on what he had intended to focus on. And the Dexter story art was brilliant. So like, if I can give a quick plug to a book that nobody read that they should read, go read that. Jason, I'm really surprised that you didn't bring this up in the art for issue one, that once again, Tim Fox and Luke Fox looked exactly the same in the art beside.
Yeah, they're brothers though. So I was willing to give them a pass. You know, they might look pretty similar. Just one might look, you know, a little younger than the other, but yeah, they did.
But doesn't one have a beard or something?
Oh boy, big difference.
Yeah. One's got
the easy like way out.
5 o'clock shadow. Anyway, Rocky, give us your thoughts as we wrap it up here. Next Batman.
Well, I think you guys are being way too harsh on Next Batman. I thought it was my initial thing. Here's the irony, and I think maybe this underscores your guys' frustration with it, maybe a little bit too. Is that I actually think it's probably one of the most well-structured stories in a long time for Batman story. Very, I thought it was very well-paced, very organized. It's very laid out. It's very clear. It establishes the magistrate, the peacekeepers. It establishes the Luke, Tim. It establishes their sister, Tam, who was injured by someone in a mask. It establishes their mother having tension and hates masks, and her, their mother, their Tim and I mean, all that family, their mother is working with the legal department of the city to try to that arguably might end up working against them. It also established tension. If I didn't know from future solicits that Tim was Batman, it's not clear who the Batman is at the end of this issue.
Didn't they make it clear when, like, even if you didn't know when he's like, you went away to some secret military training academy. It's like,
they hint it. No, fair enough. They hint it. But I mean, I think we have to, to be quite blunt, usually when a comic book reads like a great TV series, that's a good thing. That's a compliment. So it's rather odd that we're sitting here saying that this is a bad thing. This is something that, if especially somebody who's new to comics, this is an opening. This is a comic book that will absolutely attract new readers to Batman, to this new Batman, because it's clear, it's concise. And I think the art works. I will say this about Nick Darrington. I think that his art is better when it's more colorful. The entire color palette. If you read his Batman universe, when he did the art for Bendis's Batman universe, which was Bendis's best work at DC. I know it's Bendis, but it was actually very good. Amazing art. It worked. His Batman art was fantastic when he did the Batman universe. In any event, I'm a little bit surprised at the sort of the negative tone regarding next Batman. Like I actually texted to you, Trevor, earlier or the other day after I watched your review. I agreed with you that there's a meh factor to it, but when I say meh, I really don't mean that in a negative way. I think it's actually a well put together story, and I'm interested in reading the next issue. Now, with respect to the other two, I love the Katana and I love Astrid Arkham so much. And I don't have much to add other than Astrid Arkham is a character that I think is perfect. People might forget that Astrid Arkham was when she was she rose to fame there, and her big plot was to blind everyone in Gotham. she's like a badass. She's just hardcore. She's psychotic, but in a good and fun way. I think she's perfect to go against this magistrate, whoever it is. I think she's a wild card, and good Lord, you throw in, I love the whole thing with Katana there. I love the focus on the Soul Sword. I love the fact, I just love that they focused on the aspects of Katana's mythology that were the most interesting. I love the dialogue where Katana, you don't hear what her husband, who's trapped in the Soul Sword, is saying. You know, you only hear what she says. It really heightened the sense that she was off. Like you can get a sense, boy, this is a really weird kind of chick. Can you imagine fighting some chick talking to her sword and she's telling her she's going to take your soul? I mean, no, it scared the shit out of me. I actually picked up some of that tension, and I felt for the villains fighting her, for Christ's sake. This is a badass chick. And I just really loved the way that was written. And I thought the art worked well too. And it's because of that, because the meh, I say meh in a positive way for the Batman, next Batman. I love the Katana and the Astrid Arkham, which is why I'll conclude by respectfully disagreeing with my friend Dark Knight Trevor, as we often disagree, that I think it's worth the $7.99.
I get what you're saying, because I think you're right. I know I probably forgot about the fact, and you know, but I mean, this is a jumping on point for Nick. You didn't mention it was easy to jump onto or not. It does feel very much like the opening act of a television show. The thing is, when I sit down to watch an hour long procedural, I get the whole thing, and here I'm only getting a quarter of it. So yeah, I said as much. You know, once we get to the end, it may turn out that, yeah, this turns out to be a good story. Maybe it's worth it in trade, but you know, to pay $7, $8, $9 for this, and you know, it just doesn't go anywhere yet. You know, it doesn't go anywhere yet. That's the thing. It's all set up. And I just think you want a little more when you're paying that much money. And
are they all that expensive?
What's that?
Not all of them.
Okay, like Batman.
No, Superman, but this. Yeah, so
$7.99 books.
Yeah, not all of them have all the backup stories. You know, this is a much longer book.
Real quick, so, too, going further on what you were saying. I'll definitely give Rocky this, that it was well paced. I mean, the delivery of information in terms of how well it was sort of flowed out was good. The problem is that none of it lacked a punch. I actually would never recommend this to somebody who was trying to get into comics strictly because I think it just did not have that entertainment factor in the slightest.
Yeah, exactly.
Not only did it not entertain, I couldn't connect with it because everything was so like vaguely distributed. Like, you know, that scene with the cops, for example, when I gave my little summary in the beginning of my review, I left it out because it felt so inconsequential. The idea that this cop might be a potential vigilante, cool, we're probably going to see it in a greater, more revealing capacity in another issue, at least I hope. So, you know, why do I need to talk about this stupid, you know, tropey cop scene, you know? And I mean, like, the punch just wasn't there, you know? Of course, like, we know a lot of what we need to know right now, but you know, was it paced well? Was it structured well? Yes. Was it entertaining? No. And I think at the end of the day, I'm a big structure guy, but if I'm not entertained or connecting with the book or the characters or whatever, I don't care how well structured it is. Frankly, like, you know, the exposure of, you know, their sister apparently having been a past drug addict. Cool. Another rich kid gets hooked on drugs. What a big revealing sort of theme of the narrative. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was easy to understand. I agree. It was easy to understand. It was laid out very well, but at the end of the day, you give this to somebody and you go, okay, I read it and I understood it, but so what? It was boring. So that's what I worry about. One of the things I forgot to mention, this will kind of sum up how I feel about it. When the most exciting and best panel in the entire book is when the cops do show up early on, when Batman is there, you know, tackling the supposed rapist or whoever he is. And he pulls out his little gun type thing that shoots off his grappling hook, and the cops yell weapon. And then you get the boom and it shoots up and it's not a weapon at all. It's a form of escape. To me, that was like the most exciting and well-done panel in the entire book. The cop yells weapon and he shoots off his grappling hook. What does that say about the book that I thought that was the best panel in the entire book, both from a narrative aspect, art-wise, just the way that it was set up? I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Mm. And then I never got any of that feeling with any panel for the rest of the first story. So yeah, it didn't connect for me.
It felt kind of Batman 89, didn't it? Like that moment where he points the thing.
That's
and then
what I thought. With the Joker, and that goes like both ways.
Yeah, exactly. So
I thought of that panel when I was that shot when I was reading it.
Yeah. So overall, let's see if we can each assign a kind of a number grade here out of 10 for how we feel about these books overall for the first week. Because I'm kind of curious. I think I may end up being the low man on the totem pole. Which, man, normally when Trevor, Rocky, and I get together, I'm singing the praises of DC, but. I'm going to give it overall this week. I'm going to give it a 4.0. It's definitely below average for me, overall. What about you, Nick?
Wow.
I was going to say 3.
Wow. Even lower.
I can't wait for this to end. And get back into normal books.
a guy looking to, you know, have a jumping on point. So well, I don't know. That doesn't bode well. DC. Back in. Yeah, what about you, Rocky?
Awful. Good Lord. Honestly, I would be the lowest I could go is a 7. I would go 7.5, probably 7 out of 10 overall. I mean, because the,
his grade is higher than Nick and mine's combined.
Yeah, no literally. Great. I just can't give that. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm still depressed from Death Metal 7, but I didn't read that. Anything would satisfy me, so I don't know.
All right, Trevor, what about you?
Oh boy, drum roll, please. God, I'd probably have to, like, I haven't read Harley Quinn, so let me put that out there. Actually, honestly, I'm going to have to split you and Nick here, man. I'm going to give it a 3.5. It was just like... hell, like mediocrity on a fucking stick. Ironically, the story I liked the most, I expected to be one of the stories I'd like the least, that being that Wonder Woman arc. I am just like bored to shit with Future State. Like the exorbitant amount of like dialogue or monologue exposition just shot this stuff right down. I'm just so deftly bored of Future State.
And I feel for the writers too, because I think a lot of it has to do with what I was saying about how here they had these grand ideas for what 5G was supposed to be. They get blown out of the water. Okay, now we're not going to do it. Then DC comes back months later, weeks later. Mm. We don't know what the editorial timeline was. Oh, actually, we're going to do this, but you only have 2 issues. Cram in as much as you can.
I think even less than that, I think these stories could have been pulled off in a lesser amount of, like, in the same amount of issue count. I think that in general, Future State would have been well served both in terms of the flow of information and in sales if they did a Future State one shot, kind of like almost like a large anthology sort of setting up each of these different spaces that we're going to be playing into Future State.
Here's what the world of Future State looks like. The only problem with doing that is it's not even all one timeline. Clearly the Swamp Thing timeline is a different timeline than the you know, Batman timeline, than the Superman and Metropolis timeline, than the Superwoman timeline. I don't know. I can't explain. Doesn't seem like good choices are being made.
Well, that's why I think it would be prudent to do that one shot and make it almost like an anthology. And then, you know, if your each story is in its own separate time, it doesn't feel so jarring, you know, at least that way you can alleviate a little bit of that exposition, you know, so that I'm not reading a whole fucking essay on what's happened to Metropolis, you know, since Superman left.
Yep. Fair enough. Well, that averages out to a 4.5, which, you know, if we're going on a grade of 1 to 10, it is below average overall. So, but that's not to say that there aren't other books. I spoiler alert here. The second week is better. There were a lot of much better books in the second week. I'm much more excited to talk about those. So we'll be back next Friday with another episode of Future State Friday, where we talk about the books from the second week of Future State. So I want to thank all my co-hosts for joining me. As always, we'll go around real quick. Let everybody know where they can find you online. If you have anything that you want to plug, let's do that real quickly before we sign off. Go ahead, Nick.
Okay, I'm at Geeky Nick Doll on Twitter. For LRM Online, we are all over Spotify, Stitcher, whatever. I'm part of the LRM Podcast Network. I do Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, which comes out every Friday. We shoot the shit about movies and the news that week. Usually review a movie, but that's been harder to do in 2020 than any time previously. And we just recorded the first episode of a new podcast last night called Marvel Multiverse Mondays, where we'll be looking at any form of Marvel media and basically doing a review / Easter egg / what we think will happen next each week as we watch shows like WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Widow. We're going to do a recap of all the Spider-Mans before Spider-Man 3, just in case everyone does end up in that movie, et cetera, et cetera.
Right on.
All right. What about you, Rocky?
Well, I can be reached on Twitter at Metropolis40, and I have a YouTube channel called Comic Boom, and I usually just rant and rave about mostly DC comics. And lately I've been feeling a little bit depressed, but I got a little bit of a pick me up now, and I just want to thank you, Jace, for inviting me on here to talk. This actually made me feel better about comic books, despite your guys's insane low grades to these comic books. I enjoyed them, and I still enjoy talking to you guys,
man. I'll let it go this week. I thought our the Christmas Day episode that you and I recorded was awesome, man. So yeah, I love it when you and I get on, because we're kind of the old fogies here compared to these youngins. So it's nice, you know. I knew you would remember that old terrible katana costume. I can always count on you to you know, back me up on the tales of yesteryear, as it were. So all right, on to the young whippersnapper Trevor. Your book and let everybody know where they can find you.
Yes, I have written a picture book of my own. It's called Area 51, The Helix Project. You can find me talking about it quite poorly, I believe twice on Jace's podcast. I'm horrible at selling my own book. So I just honestly, it sounds really horrible. I just recommend you pick it up and read it because I don't want to spoil anything. It's a sci-fi noir comic book taking place in the 1970s UFO hysteric America under the sort of shadow of the Cold War, government conspiracies with a sort of sci-fi super soldier twist in a way that you haven't seen before. So go check that out. You can pick that up at darknightnation.com/shop. Otherwise, if you want to go check me out on YouTube, when I am actually there to do content, you'll also see guys like Jason Comic Boom around for our Let's Talk Comics discussion show. Otherwise, when I do my own sort of edited videos, they are sort of deep dive analytical comic book reviews, although I'm more tempted to just call them analyses by now. If you want to see me go more into depth on the next Batman, the John Ridley story, I actually just dropped one a couple of days ago where I really, really break down the successes and the failures of the issue and give it like an overall score. So definitely go check that out. And yeah, Jace, thanks for inviting me on. It's a good time as always. And, I look forward to next week. And I hope the air of optimism that you are breathing proves true, because I need something better than this.
Well, Rocky, you've had a chance to check out some of the books for next week as well, right?
Yeah, I've read them all, actually. And I will say that I'm generally happy with it. But I will also say that my overall grade will be lower than this week.
Huh.
But I'm still, it's still on the, it's certainly above, certainly above six anyway. I'll say that.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to work. Yeah. Wow. This is, you know, and what's really going to be fun is looking toward the end of the second month. You know, this is going to go on for 8 weeks, guys. The eight weeks of Future State Comics, 2 months. You hear my puppy in the background. He won't be quiet. But anyway, it's going to be interesting when we get to the end, how we're going to, you know, look at this overall.
I think it's going to be positive, man, because 8 weeks of what would normally have been probably 6 months worth of comic books. I think they've crammed a lot of story and substance in there, and they've had, it's forced them to be more creative than maybe it's challenged them. And again, I'm erring on the side of optimism here. So don't.
And again, I
Mr. Three,
I'm going to be beating this drum probably for the entirety of the 8 weeks. I'm such a visual guy. The artwork means so much to me. And this art in the first week was so subpar. I really hope it gets better. That's going to be a big difference for me. So anyway, we've rambled on long enough, longer than we had planned on. So everybody, we want to thank you for joining us as always. Be sure you subscribe to all these guys' channels. They put out tons of great content, whether it's comics, Dark Knight Nation, Comic Boom, or in Nick's world where it's more movies and television. Give them a follow. I'll put links to everybody's social media in the show notes. So as always, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.